Good evening. This is Mark Lynch, and this is Inquiry. My guest tonight is Carol Connors. She's a songwriter for television and film, singer, and so much more. And we're talking about her new memoir, Elvis, Rocky, and Me, My Wild Ride Through Music and Film, earning Oscar, Emmy, Grammy, Golden Globe nominations, Famous Boyfriends, Phil Spector's Enmity, Carol Shelby's Cobras, and a Playboy photo shoot. Carol, welcome to the show. It's such a pleasure to talk to you about this wild book.
Thank you, my dear. Thank you, Mark. I'm very excited about it. My wild ride through life so far.
When I got done reading this, it was like I had dreamt it.
I've lived it.
I know. There are so many amazing stories and wild stories in this book. What finally brought you to put it all down on paper for people to read?
Well, a couple things happened. A documentary was being made, and Stephen and I have known each other, Stephen Bergsman, the author, actually. And he said, Carol, you really have to do a book and do it in conjunction with the documentary. And I went, oh, I don't want to do a book. I've wanted to do a book, but I don't want to do a book. And he said, you're going to do a book. So every week for like months, two times a week, he would call around exactly the time you called, around this time, and we would spend about an hour. And I would have to relive my life. And he did such a good job on his homework that he really knew lots about my life and asked me very pertinent questions.
It is an amazing, and the amount of characters that float in and out of your story is incredible. I'm just glad you're still here.
So am I.
Because I would have been worn out. Now, your memoir begins and ends with Elvis. You went out with it. You dated. You lost your virginity to Elvis.
Well, you did use those magic words, didn't you? Diane Warren and I go through a whole thing. I call her the goat. We go through a whole thing about that. The key to everything for me was to know him is to love him.
Okay.
It really was. It was.
That's your big hit from the Teddy Bears.
Yes. What happened was. I don't want to say the name until the end, but
okay.
this young boy, he was 3 years older than me, was dating my girlfriend. And he would come to pick us up and pick her up, and I was her best friend, and I'd be twiddling my thumb and singing. And one day, every day, I mean, twiddling. And one day he said to me, I love your voice. I'm going to write a song for your voice. Do you have $10? And I went, $10? I don't even have 10 cents. I'm not even 17 years of age. What are you talking about? So I went to my parents and I said, I need $10. And we were poor. And my mother said, Annette-la, my real name, Annette, go do your homework. And my father had been a jockey. And jockeys live on the edge. He wasn't a gambling man. He just lived on the edge. Imagine getting on a horse and going at 30 miles an hour. And he said, Gail, let's listen. So I said, well, Daddy, if you'll give me the $10, we're going to be rich. We're going to live in a mansion. You're going to have a beautiful car, and I'm going to buy you a racehorse. And he said, I don't want a racehorse. I'm off the track. Bottom line is they finally gave me the $10. And I went to this boy, and I said, here's the $10. And the boy was Phil Spector. The infamous Phil Spector. And the title, To Know Him Is to Love Him, came from his father's epitaph.
Wow.
It said, to know him was to love him. His father committed suicide.
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. And
I have to ask you right off the bat, because of how everything went down, what did you immediately think of Phil Spector?
You mean when I was...
Even young.
In the documentary, which is also called Elvis, Rocky, and Me, in the documentary, I state that he was wonderful.
Really?
He was sweet. He was funny. He was brilliant. He corrected my English. I didn't know how to use the adverb "lee," like so you would say softly. He would correct me every time. He would do imitations of, he loved Lenny Bruce.
Oh, wow.
He loved Jonathan Winters, so he would do Ma Fricket. I mean, seriously. So what happened is we went in the studio. It was not the A side.
I know, that was the weird thing. So your big hit was not even the A side. Now, the group is called the Teddy Bears. Who else was in the group besides
there
you and Phil?
Marsha Lieb, who was gorgeous. So all the girls would, if you get the book, you'll see the pictures of him.
He was
really handsome. And all the girls and everybody, like, you know, when we would travel back east on the plane, all the stewardesses would be around him. And Phil and I would be like, I'd be twiddling my thumbs. And Phil would be correcting my English. I mean, that's what it came down to. So we ended up having this number one record, not only here. Mark, it was the number one record in the world at the time. And climbed the charts very slowly. And then went to number one and stood at number one more than any other record that year. And then dropped off slowly. So we were being heard forever and ever in France and Germany, blah, 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 all Japan. And all of a sudden, years later, cut to years later, this young creepy guy comes up to me in a market, and I'm holding a bottle of milk, and he says to me, "Are you the girl that sang 'To Know Him Is to Love Him'?"
Wow.
And I went, "Yes." He said, "Well, Elvis loves that song." I said, "Who?" He said, "Elvis Presley loves that song. And he would, and your voice, he would love to meet you." He tells the he was sort of a low ring Memphis mafia guy. You know, that's what Elvis called all the guys. They were the Memphis mafia. And I said, "Right, yes, sure, of course, yeah, right." But being my father's daughter, I gave him my phone number. This guy could have been a serial killer for all I know. I mean, he looked like a creep, you know, but I gave him my number. 2 weeks later, he called. My mother answered the phone, and she said, "Annette," that she never called me Carol unless she was talking about me. I was Annette to her. She gave me the phone, and his name was Corey. And he said, I've talked it over with Elvis. I'd love you. I'll come pick you up. I'd love you to meet him." And I said, "Fine. Okay, you got it." And my father said, okay. My mother went, "Oh, no, no, not Elvis Presley, no." at that time. Went to Elvis's, walked down these steps. It was in Bel Air. They were renting a house. And this beautiful man at the other side of the room, very cat-like, and I love cats.
Oh, young Elvis was amazing.
Gorgeous, gorgeous. And he sort of cat-liked over to me, and I felt like a mouse. And he said to me, first words out of his mouth, "So why'd you name the group Teddy Bears?" And I went, "Oh, my God, that really is Elvis." And I was like sort of like shaking. And I went, I didn't know what to say, Mark. And I went, "Just want to be your teddy bear." And that started our love affair.
Wow. But here's the weird thing. You never left the house.
Left what house?
Elvis's place. You never went out. He would just always meet you there.
I thought you meant that I never left his house in the 9 months I went with him. Yes, he did not want to go out. Very similar to Hugh Hefner.
Yeah.
Did not want to go out. Everything was brought in, and, you know, food and whatever, but did not want to go out. And we went together for like about 9 months, and I was so stupid, I didn't have his baby. You know, I put him through whatever for months and months and months. And he was very kind. We would harmonize together.
Well,
because remember, he wanted to meet me not because of me.
Because of your song.
Yes. And if you look at a picture that I have of Priscilla and myself, we resemble each other.
Wow. Wow.
He told me that, by the way.
And at the end of the book, you talk about when Elvis dies and how devastated you were still that many years later.
We had stayed friends. And many, many times I would go to Vegas with my girlfriends. And Joe Esposito, that was his right-hand man, other than, you know, Colonel Parker, who was his manager. I would have the best seats. We would go back, up to the penthouse or backstage or whatever. And he was always, in fact, once, do you remember Shelley Fabre?
Of course.
Donnie Angel.
Yeah. And she was also on a TV show.
Right, with Donna Reed.
Right.
I think it was with Donna
Reed. Right.
And he was sitting with Shelley, and I was walking down these steps into the with the dressing room, you know, where the party was. And he said, here comes, he thought I was very pretty. Well, I resembled Priscilla. He said, here comes beautiful Carol. She's blind as a bat. I was very nearsighted. And he said to Shelley, we went together on and off for 2.5 years. And I looked at him and I went, Elvis, it was more off than on. And it wasn't 2.5 years. But we stayed friends. And he was so proud when I did Rocky, when I got Rocky.
And I'm for the benefit of the audience, and you should read the book, you wrote the theme music, to the theme song, the key thing that everybody remembers from Rocky, the music.
I co-wrote it. With Bill Conti and Ann Robbins.
Yep.
Gonna fly now. Ba, 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 ba. Yeah. Gonna fly now.
Now, Carol, this is only a half hour, so I've got to talk about other stuff because you had so much going on in your life. I want to talk about Hey Little Cobra because, first of all, I really love that song still.
Thank you.
That song, Brian Wilson resented you for writing that song.
Yes, he came up to me one day and he said, we all, because I penetrated the all boys club.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said, we always knew it was written by a girl. And he sort of, you know, spit the word out. And I said, because, you know.
Heavens to Betsy.
He said, you can't take your car. Because the last verse is, around the fart train, got my way. Stingrays and Jags were so far behind. Took my Cobra out of gear and let it coast to the line. And he said, you can't let your car coast to the line. And I said, Brian, if your car is that far in front, that's exactly what you can do. So, you know, it became this mega, mega, one of the most important hot rod songs, they say, ever written.
Oh, it's a great song.
Thank you.
Tell me about who Carol Shelby is.
Well, Carol Shelby was the designer of the car. And after Elvis, my next boyfriend, God, that sounds terrible. I went with Dr. Vadim Kondratiev. He was a psychiatrist. I think I needed a psychiatrist, but he was my next boyfriend. And he had an AC Bristol, which is an English car.
Yeah, yeah.
And I cracked up the front a little bit. And he had read an article about a young, not a young, but a designer that was putting a Cobra front on a Bristol back with a Ford engine. Are you ready for that combo?
Whoa.
So he said, go see Carol Shelby. So I went, okay, so I put on my little hip huggers and my little crop top you can see the picture in the book.
Oh, it's a great picture.
Thank you. It's also the cover of Elvis, Rocky, and Me, which you can get at Amazon, and anywhere where books are sold. I have to say that, or Stephen will kill me. And I went to see Carol, and he took a meeting because he loved to know him is to love him. As I said, Mark, it was the key to all the things in my life. And I said, Mr. Shelby, I said, can you put a Cobra front on a Bristol back? And he looked at me and said, I can't do that, little girl. He said, but if you write a song about my car and it becomes a big hit, I'll give you one and I'll take you to Le Mans. Ooh la la. I went to Le Mans in 1965 with Carol Shelby and Lee Iacocca, who was head of high performance at Ford, and I had a Cobra. I had two Cobras.
There's a scene in the book where you're actually trying to figure out what color Cobra you want.
Oh, my God. I every time I would get a sort of bug, you know, a bug in my head about, in my ear about, oh, I like this outfit I'm wearing today. Maybe I'll paint the Cobra that. You have no, I must have painted the cobras like George Barris. George Barris is the one, the famous George Barris who would paint my car. And it, and I must have had 498 coats of lacquer on that car at the end.
Well, you know, you talk about, you know, to know him is to love him, but Hey Little Cobra opened a lot of doors too, like Steve McQueen. Steve McQueen loved that song.
I know. And so Jay Leno has that song.
Oh, right, of course, with his car collection.
He has it up in his garage.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. I get such a kick, a shut him down kick out of it, if you know what I mean. I did want to say one more thing about Elvis, and because I think it's really important.
Sure.
If he was offered A Star Is Born, the role that Kris Kristofferson played, and Colonel Parker turned it down. It's in the biopic with Austin Butler. There is a scene about that. And I, to this day, believe that if Elvis would have done A Star Is Born, he would have lived.
Because it would have changed his career arc.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah, you're
he
absolutely right.
He wanted to be respected, and he would have.
Yeah, Colonel Parker had him doing the same kind of films over and over and over again.
Yes.
And that would have been a breakout film for him.
And he wanted that, but he didn't do it. I also believed he would have been nominated for an Oscar. I don't know. I don't think he would have won, but because of the way the Oscars work, and I am a member of them, but I do think he would have been nominated. And you want to hear the irony? He would have been up against Rocky.
Oh, wow.
Is that bizarre?
That is bizarre. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My guest tonight is Carol Connors, songwriter for film and television, singer, so much more. And you can learn about it by reading her memoir, whether we're talking about Elvis, Rocky, and Me, My Wild Ride Through Music and Film, earning Oscar, Emmy, Grammy, Golden Globe nominations, Famous Boyfriends, Phil Spector's Enmity, Carol Shelby's Cobras, and a Playboy photo shoot. Now, you did have some really amazing boyfriends. Like David,
I had loves of my life.
David Jansen, the star of The Fugitive, among other things. And he was a sort of a player when you met him. He was had been dating Angie Dickinson and Suzanne Pleshette.
Well, he loved, Sidney Korshak, who was his godfather, not a very powerful man, but said that after David died, he took me to lunch, and he said there were two people that David really, really loved. He said, you and Suzanne Pleshette. And not only do you look alike, sort of, at that time, but, God, I looked like everybody. Not only, but you sound alike. She had a very deep voice.
Right, you do sound like her.
Well, not, she was at a deeper voice.
She did.
And Sidney said, and he never married either one of you.
Wow. Now, you also had a blazing affair with Robert Culp.
Yes, that was
of I Spy.
I.
there's some details in the book that people need to read. Now, I want to talk to you about your career, though, because you became sort of like a go-to person for writing like the key songs for films, and it was a tough life. Like you had to really hustle to get gigs.
Yes.
I want you to just tell me, tell the audience what it was like to be a songwriter.
Well, to be a songwriter for film and television, it was a really another all-boys club because at that time there was Marilyn and Alan Bergman, and they were married, and Carol, and they wrote great songs with Michelle Legrand and everybody, and Carol Bayer-Sager, and she ended up married Burt Bacharach.
That's right.
And then there was me, little old me. So I was sort of on my own. And like Diane Warren, who is, in my mind, one of the greatest of all songwriters, she calls me a trailblazer because in her mind, I sort of set the trail for what came after me, such as Diane and many other women now that are writing. And it's sort of a heavy load. I never thought about that, Mark. I was just doing what I wanted to do. I have a saying, my life is my music, and my music is my life. Mm-hmm. That is what I have dedicated my life, too.
And that's so true when you read your memoir. That's true throughout the entire book, including when you were just a kid listening to music. And you can still remember the names of all the groups and the people and the singers that you listened to. Writing songs were so central to your life. And you got to work with an amazing number of people. You got to work with Ennio Morricone.
Yes, I would love for your audience, if they will, to go listen to a song called "My Love, We Are One." We Are One. It's from Orca the Killer Whale. It was a Dino De Laurentiis film. It's been inducted into the AFI, American Film Institute. The ending is really amazing in my mind, and the story of this particular. The film and the song and everything. And I don't normally read what people write because I'm too embarrassed. I mean, what if they don't like it? I don't want to know about it. But I did read some of them, and people would weep over this song, how much it touched them, which touches me. So it's called My Love, We Are One, and it's from the film Orca the Killer Whale. But I got to work out where I wrote Looking for Mr. Goodbar.
Yep.
For Richard Brooks, who was one of the great directors, Elmer Gantry, Blackboard Jungle. I mean, he was considered one of the great directors, and I got to co-write that song. And I think it was the last song that it was called "The Earthling." It was William Holden's last song.
Right? Is that a New Zealand? It's a New Zealand or Australian picture. It's
yes.
Yeah.
And it was Ricky Schroeder's first film. And Maureen McGovern did one of the most, beautiful jobs on that song. The vocal is so inspiring. And her mother passed away after that song. And she told me that it was so emotional that she could not sing it for a long time. And it's called Halfway Home.
But it was work, too. I know you love it, but it was really hard work.
Yes. I mean, I also did Walt Disney's The Rescuers.
That's right.
And I did most of the music, practically all the music for the film, and the lyrics I co-wrote. But that was another Oscar nomination. And the bottom, kids come up to me and they go, R-E-S-C-U-E. And I sang on that because they said, oh, Carol, sing this part. And I wrote the part, so I knew it. And I sang I'm Gonna Fly Now from Rocky.
That's right.
Bill Conti said, Carol, get in there and put yourself on an apple box, and your voice is so powerful. Stand a little back. So I'm one of the high voices. Gonna fly, fly, fly. That's me.
I find that absolutely amazing. Now, you also were in a few films, too.
Yes.
So like Catalina Caper, which I just ended up seeing on TCM like about a month ago. I know. Well, so what? You were on film. How many people can say that?
It was when I did Red Line 7000 for Howard Hawks.
That was his last film, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. No, he did one after with John Wayne and Robert Mitchum.
Okay.
Rio Diablo or something.
Yeah, but
you
were in Red Line 7000.
Yes, yes. Because he said to me, he said he loved, because I had the Cobra then, and he was a car buff, and he loved to have the Cobra on the Paramount lot parked next to his, I think it was a Cadillac, and he would say to me, if you don't act in my film, I'm not going to use your songs. And I said, but Mr. Hawks, I don't know how to act. And he said, neither do they. Either be in my film or I'm not using it. So I got 6 weeks of work and got my SAG card.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, we're going to run out of time because we only have a few minutes left, but we have to talk about the fact you're a friend of Hugh Hefner, and he actually had a photo shoot done of you, but it never got published.
It was when I was going with Robert Culp.
Yep.
And I was sitting by the grotto in a bikini, and they came up to me. They sort of ganged up on me and said, Carol, we want you to, be in Playboy. And I went, what? Another one of those, what? What are you talking about? We did the shoot, went to Mexico, spent a week there. It was glorious. They did the shoot for 3 days. Their number one photographer at the time, Mario Caselli.
Yep.
And but Hef was very kind. He said to me, We have, Carol, I'm going to allow you to go over the copy and to pick the pictures with me. There were hundreds of pictures, which I have. He gave them to me. But because he said, but I have a feeling you're never going to let me print it. And I went, why? He said, your middle-class sex mores.
Oh, well.
And guess what? It never printed because all I could think of was that my father.
Oh, yeah.
My father would be at his poker game on Wednesday night, and one of the guys would pull and say, oh, your daughter, huh? Julius, your daughter. And it was going to be called my, and she writes songs too, .. And I was on top of the baby grand piano.
Oh, my God. Now, because of that, you also had a lifelong friendship with Barbie Benton.
She's my best friend and mermaid buddy.
I know.
Can
that's
I do my dolphin call? Can I do my dolphin call
sure.
before we end? Are you ready?
I'm ready.
She tries to imitate me, but nobody can.
Okay.
Okay. Okay. Now, don't panic.
Okay. Wow. Wow. Have you ever done that in front of a dolphin?
Yes.
And did they respond?
Well, they wrote a letter to Dolphin, the president of all the dolphins, and said, what is she doing? Yeah, no, they have responded. They have responded. They come to see what it is, and then they swim away.
Now, the amazing thing is, we've only scratched the surface of this memoir, and there's so much detail. There's a scene where you're in an elevator with Fidel Castro, Raul Castro, and Che Guevara. That's just one tiny scene in this book.
Yeah. With Phil Spector, the teddy bears were to know him and to love him. I think it was right after stormed out of the United Nations.
Yep. My guest tonight has been Carol Connors, songwriter for film and television, singer, and so much more. And we've been talking about her memoir, Elvis, Rocky, and Me, My Wild Ride Through Music and Film, earning Oscar, Emmy, Grammy, Golden Globe nominations, Famous Boyfriends, Phil Spector's Enmity, Carol Shelby's Cobras, and a Playboy photo shoot. Carol, it's been so much fun talking to you.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I loved it, Mark. I really did.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name's Mark Lynch. Good night.